Gaza, a war of starvation, adding that the number of people dying of hunger and malnutrition was increasing, especially children. He explained that the health system in northern Gaza is now completely unable to meet the needs of the besieged territory, particularly after the Kamal Atwan Hospital was captured by the Zionist regime forces. Gaza is on the brink of famine, the head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, warned in late February. Philippe Lazzarini wrote on social media, "The last time UNRWA was able to deliver food aid to northern Gaza was on January 23rd. At least 500,000 people are facing famine, while nearly the entire population of Gaza, 2.3 million people, is experiencing acute food shortages. Figures from the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs show. In late February, at least two babies died of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza. Aid organizations have warned that the Zionist regime's denial of food and water to the Palestinian enclave may amount to a crime against humanity." Randa Ghazi of NGO Save the Children said Gaza was witnessing the worst level of malnutrition worldwide. She told Middle East Eye, "Pregnant women are not receiving the nutrition and health care they need, making them more susceptible to disease and increasing risks of death during childbirth."
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Islamic spirituality is necessary for everything. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's an honor to be here at your service. We are talking about Islamic lifestyle, and in the program today we want to talk about something specifically, which is this idea that spiritual purification and spirituality is something which is necessary for everything. Now, when we're talking about Islamic lifestyle, of course, we very fully well understand that spirituality is something which is an integral part of Islamic lifestyle. Of course, if we want to talk about a physical body and a physical body that has a spirit within it, that spirit is spirituality, and Islam promotes and emphasizes both the physical and the spiritual aspects of not only a human being, but really the cosmos, in general. Now, spirituality is something, of course, which is incredibly important in all of these aspects, right? The spirituality and this, great moral and ethical virtues that bring about perfection for a human being. Well, that's really the core gist of everything, right? It's something that is incredibly necessary in our lifestyle, especially in our Islamic lifestyle. You know, without that spirituality, we'll just have this empty shell of a body and an empty shell of a life, and it really will not be satisfying at all. And that's something that we see across the world, that despite having the material means beyond imagination, because there is no spirituality, people are suffering on a global level. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about Islamic lifestyle and how spirituality is really integral to everything. We talked about how that, you know, you can have all of the material means and resources, but, you know, at your disposal, all of them. And there are people and there are certain, you know, segments of societies across the world in which you see that the material aspects are completely taken care of. But despite that, because the spiritual aspects and spirituality is not being addressed within these human beings or within these societies or these segments of society, we find that people are suffering, people are sad, people are not happy overall, and that is because the spiritual needs are not being taken care of. And this is precisely where Islam comes into play. Islamic lifestyle, one of its fundamental aspects is spirituality and this connection with Allah and this connection with the afterlife and this connection with eternalness and eternal happiness and eternal life and these moral and virtues. All of these things are really truly bring happiness to a human being. Islam is the one who is promoting this and teaching this to a world which is devoid of all of these spiritual aspects as we move forwards in time. Science without spirituality is a danger. Knowledge without spirituality is danger. And of course, any kind of a lifestyle without spirituality is a danger. And so if we want to attain that Islamic lifestyle, one of the things that we're going to have to do is to pay attention to our spirituality and our spiritual selves.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The co-founders of the Truth Social platform are suing Donald Trump, claiming that Trump tried to dilute their shares. A lawyer representing the co-founders of Truth Social said, "They created Truth Social and now the beneficiary of that, Donald Trump, doesn't want to pay." We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Huffington Post has covered this story and tells us more. An estimated $4 billion business merger involving former President Donald Trump's social media company could hit a major snarl after a lawsuit was filed on Wednesday, 28th of February, accusing Donald Trump of trying to dilute the co-founder's shares. Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss, who co-founded Trump's Truth Social platform, filed the lawsuit in Delaware, claiming their previously negotiated 8.6% stake in Trump Media and Technology Group has been watered down to less than 1%, The Washington Post and CNBC have reported. The dispute comes as the Trump Media and Technology Group eyes a merger with the publicly traded shell company Digital World Acquisition Corp. The sale, which Digital World's shareholders are scheduled to vote on next month, is estimated to be worth as much as $4 billion. According to the New York Times. The attempt here is to deprive them of the deal, attorney Christopher Clark, who is representing Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss, partnership United Atlantic Ventures, in the complaint told CNBC News. They actually went out and did the work. They created the Truth Social platform, and now the beneficiary of that, Donald Trump, doesn't want to pay. Christopher Clark and representatives of Donald Trump, Digital World, and the Trump Media and Technology Group did not immediately respond to Huffington Post request for comment. Under the United Atlantic Ventures previously reached agreement, Donald Trump would receive 78 million shares that are worth about $3.5 billion at today's share price value. United Atlantic Ventures would receive more than 7 million shares, equating to roughly $339 million, according to the Washington Post review of a court motion requesting expedited proceedings in the case. Digital World appeared to recognize that previous deal with United Atlantic Ventures in a Securities and Exchange Commission filing early this month, but said that the agreement was declared void by a Trump attorney more than 2 years ago. The sale of any stock could come as a major financial lifeline to Donald Trump, who has faced numerous legal judgments against him since leaving Oval Office, including an order earlier this month to pay $355 million plus interest for committing business fraud in New York State. An appeals court judge on Wednesday denied Trump's request to pause that judgment's enforcement. Trump, currently the frontrunner for the Republican presidential nomination, argued that he doesn't have the cash to cover the penalty. This isn't the first time that a founder of Trump's Truth Social platform has spoken out against him while alleging misconduct, particularly involving stocks. Will Wilkerson, who helped found the Trump Media and Technology Group, but was then fired after speaking out about alleged security law violations, alleged in 2022 that Donald Trump asked Andy Litinsky to relinquish his stock in the company to his wife, Melania Trump. Will Wilkerson also said that Trump's sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, requested a financial stake in the social media platform despite having never worked for the company. They were coming in and asking for a handout, Wilkerson told the Washington Post. They had no bearing in this company, and they were taking equity away from hardworking individuals. National broadcaster CNBC has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump was accused in a lawsuit on Wednesday, 28th of February, of trying to drastically dilute the value of stock shares in his social media company, held by the firm's co-founders, potentially depriving them of hundreds of millions of dollars in profits. The partnership United Atlantic Ventures alleges that Donald Trump's media and technology group engaged in wrongful 11th-hour maneuvering to dilute United Atlantic Ventures' minority stake in the media company, according to a court filing. The Delaware Chancery Court lawsuit comes in advance of the planned merger of TMTG, the Trump Media and Technology Group, with a shell company called Digital World Acquisition Corp., which would result in the shares of the combined entity being publicly traded. If the Digital World Acquisition Corp. shareholders approve the merger next month, Trump's 90% stake in the Trump Media and Technology Group could be valued at more than $3 billion, given the Digital World Acquisition Corp.'s current share price. On Thursday, an investment vehicle controlled by former Digital World Acquisition Corp. chairman and chief executive officer Patrick Orlando sued in Chancery Court to block the merger unless it receives a larger number of shares from the combination that Digital World Acquisition Corp. proposes, according to a Reuters news agency report. The news service noted that the Trump Media and Technology Group and the Digital World Acquisition Corp. on Tuesday sued Orlando and his ARK Global Investments II vehicle in Florida, claiming that he's trying to obtain a windfall by extortion. United Atlantic Ventures is a partnership of Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss, who initially pitched Trump the idea of creating Trump Media in February of 2021, after the former president was banned from Twitter and Facebook following the deadly 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot. Both Andy Litinsky and Wes Moss were contestants on Trump's television show The Apprentice. The Trump Media and Technology Group later built and launched Truth Social, the social media platform that Donald Trump uses almost exclusively to communicate with the public. The planned merger comes as Trump, who is leading candidate for the Republican presidential nomination, has been ordered to pay more than $500 million in civil judgments in New York related to trial verdicts for business fraud and the defamation of writer E. Jean Carroll. The attempt here is to deprive them of the deal, said Christopher Clark, the lawyer for United Atlantic Ventures in the partnership's Delaware lawsuit against the Trump Media and Technology Group. It's not like they went out and bought a lottery ticket, Clark said of the co-founders. They actually went out and did the work. They created the Truth Social platform, and now the beneficiary of that, Donald Trump, doesn't want to pay. Not a unique story, unfortunately, Christopher Clark said, referring to Trump's infamous practice of contesting bills from contractors and lawyers. CNBC has requested comment from a spokesperson for Donald Trump. CNBC has requested comment from a spokesman for Donald Trump, as well as the Trump Media and Technology Group. English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the Commander-in-Chief of Iran's Armed Forces, Imam Khamenei. Martyr Soleimani revived the resistance front and its strengthening must continue. December 31st, 2023. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. We are grateful to God for gifting this worldly reward to this outstanding figure, Martyr Soleimani, every day before our eyes. What you are witnessing the spreading and propagation of his name and memory is this honorable man's worldly reward. We cannot even imagine or fathom what kind of reward he will receive in the hereafter. This is just his worldly reward. I imagine that from the day he was martyred and continuing up until today, Martyr Soleimani's name, his memory, and his characteristics have spread among the people many times more than during his lifetime. This is the same thing that someone once said, Martyr Soleimani is more dangerous for us than Qasim Soleimani. The other side had said this. They were right. That truly is the case. So, not only has the dust of forgetfulness not settled on this martyr, his splendor, brightness, and lucidity have increased every day, and God willing, this will continue to increase even more. This is God's grace. Why did this happen? I believe it is because of Martyr Soleimani's sincerity. This is the same thing that is often difficult for people.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We do things, but the spirit of the work that we do lies in sincerity. The work that was undertaken by this martyr truly had this kind of spirit in it. He truly worked with sincerity. We would sense this when we communicated with him about his work. There was no showing off, pretentiousness, or egoism in his work. He worked for the cause of God. His actions were for the cause of God. I believe it was his sincerity that made his worldly reward so apparent. We observed such a thing in Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, as well. He was the same. 3 or 4 days after Imam Khomeini had been buried, a large meeting was held in his shrine. The shrine was barely anything at that time. They had just enclosed it with a fence. We went there. I went with a helicopter. As I stared down at the desert there, that section has been built now, but it was mostly a desert back then, I saw the crowd walking there on foot. Who was taking them there? What was it that appealed to them so much that it drew them there? I said it was Imam Khomeini's sincerity that drew those people there, and it was the same with our dear martyr. He was a sincere man.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
The limelight.
Almost 400 schools in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed during the Zionist regime's genocidal war. These schools previously served approximately 460,000 children and 17,000 teachers. According to United Nations estimates, at least 55% of schools will require either major repairs or complete reconstruction. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Khaled is a baby, born shortly before the Zionist regime declared its genocidal war on Gaza. He has spent most of his life in very unhealthy conditions. In the early stages of the war, his family had to evacuate their home in northern Gaza. Sahar, Khaled's mother, said, We had to walk on streets filled with rubble. We were under constant bombardment. It was absolutely terrifying. Khaled's parents are unable to provide him with bare necessities. Diapers are scarce, so are infant formula and other food items. Sahar said, He doesn't even have enough winter clothes or blankets to cover him during the cold nights. Khulud, a relative of Sahar, has a one-year-old son. Displaced and malnourished, Khulud is not able to produce sufficient breast milk for her child. Her son requires special diapers, as otherwise his skin becomes irritated. Finding them is impossible, Khulud said. Look at the prices. A pack of diapers costs $50, 100 grams of baby milk, $3, a pack of oats or wheat seeds, $7, a jar of honey around $50, the list goes on and on. She added, Given these prices, it would cost us around $200 a week to take care of him. That's way more than we can afford. Mahmoud has fled Gaza City's beach refugee camp for Deir al-Balah in the middle area. His four-year-old son has started urinating in his sleep. Bedwetting is a known symptom of childhood trauma. The boy's life is truly miserable, Mahmoud, who has seven other children, said. He added, He is at the age where he should no longer be wearing diapers, but he must do so at nighttime now. Mahmoud is a fisher. It is too dangerous for him to ply his trade. Even before the current war, the Zionist regime was frequently attacking fishers. Mahmoud said, I have lost everything in this war. My home, my work, I have nothing left. It causes great pain to go back to my tent every single day and see this child crying for milk and bread. Mahmoud has left Al Rimal, a neighborhood in Gaza City, for Deir al-Balah. His wife is pregnant. Mahmoud said, I am extremely concerned about her and my next son. We are praying every single day that this war ends. I've lost my work, and we do not know what has happened to our home. I'm just baffled and bewildered. Ola Nasser has been devastated by the genocidal war on Gaza. Her husband and her son were killed when the Zionist regime attacked their neighbor's home in the southern city of Khan Yunis. She recalls that a very heavy and large missile fell on their house during the attack. Nasser was upstairs with her daughter, while her husband and son were downstairs. She said, Suddenly I found myself on the street. I was on a pile of rubble. When she was brought to hospital, Nasser learned that her husband and son had been killed. My heart still aches for the loss of everything, she said. My husband, my child, and the school where I worked. Nasser is a science teacher. Before the war, she was working in the Shajaya neighborhood of Gaza City. The area where my school was located is completely destroyed, Nasser said. Like so many others, She had hoped that the Zionist regime would spare schools, which have become shelters for displaced people. Nasser said, schools and hospitals are supposed to be safe places in the war. Almost 400 schools in Gaza have been damaged or destroyed during the current war. These schools previously served approximately 460,000 children and 17,000 teachers. According to United Nations estimates, at least 55% of schools will require either major repairs or complete reconstruction. Samia Salem taught math in Tel al-Hawa area of Gaza City before the war. She laments how Israeli regime troops laid siege to the area. Schools and other civilian infrastructures were shelled. She said, there will be no schooling for children this year. Then we will need a long period to restore everything. That means students could lose another year, and this will greatly affect their motivation and the level of their education. Salem fled Gaza City for Rafah in the south 2 months ago. With classes unable to function as normal, she had observed how children and parents are still trying to learn in a more informal setting. Many children in Gaza are reading and learning math in tents. Education has been repeatedly disrupted in Gaza over recent years, both because of Israel's attacks and the COVID-19 pandemic. Salem said, "We need to protect the schools. They must not be exposed to bombing and destruction. Every aspect of education has been affected. Kindergartens have even been attacked by the Zionist regime." Sadiq Al-Khuzur, spokesperson for the education ministry in Gaza, said, "Israel does not consider that Palestinians have a right to education. Israel has destroyed our schools and disrupted the process of scientific and intellectual development." Zoha Al-Daba is a 12-year-old girl from Al-Zaytun, east of Gaza City. Her family had to evacuate their home and head for Khan Yunis. She said, "The occupation destroyed my school. Why is Israel attacking education?" Zoha does not know how many children from her school have been martyred in this war. She said, "I miss books and school activities. I used to spend a long time in school. Now we spend all our time in a tent. I want my old routine back."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and wastes to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war, and dire conditions and scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gaza from recovering.
It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Discussing legal avenues to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Adamant about finding a way to end the catastrophe in Gaza, Iran's Red Crescent Society brought together legal experts from 21 countries in Tehran to attend an international congress on the occupation of Palestine, with a special focus on Israeli violations of international humanitarian law.
Today, what's happening in Gaza is beyond words. Terms such as war crimes are simply not enough to describe what the Zionists are doing. It's been over 5 months, and more than 30,000 people have been killed. The least Muslim countries can do is completely cut off their ties and trade with the Zionists.
A stance that was reiterated by every single speaker of the conference.
Legal experts have been voicing their support for Palestinians. What is happening in Gaza is against everything we know to be the pillars of modern society, violating the Geneva Convention, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international humanitarian law.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international humanitarian law clearly gives the right to Palestinians. The Israelis are violating the Geneva Convention day in and day out. They should be held accountable for all these crimes in an international tribunal.
We're very clear that the United Nations, the Security Council, and this stance is politicized.
So far, calls to allow food distribution in Gaza have been denied, and there have been numerous warnings against a looming famine. With more than 40,000 online participants from different cities in Iran and around the world, the call for change can be clearly heard.
The participants are demanding accountability. They say today the same countries that wrote the Geneva Convention and the international organizations that claim to be advocates of human rights are silent in the face of Israeli atrocities in Gaza. However, with public opinion shifting against the Israeli regime, this conference could be a first step in creating the kind of change the international community wants to see. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
After days of pause in Yemen's naval operations, the spokesman for the Yemeni army announced the successful targeting of an Israeli ship in the Arabian Sea with multiple missiles. He said that the attack followed the drone and missile strikes against U.S. warships in the Red Sea.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces launched an attack on the Israeli ship MSC Sky sailing in the Arabian Sea with a number of appropriate naval missiles. The missiles hit the vessel in an accurate and direct manner. The operation came only hours after Yemen's armed forces targeted a number of enemy American warships in the Red Sea with a number of ballistic missiles and drones.
Experts say this operation sends a message to the US and UK that Yemen's armed forces are still capable of targeting Israeli-bound vessels in the regional waters, despite their aggression against Yemen. They believe that the Yemeni army has not used its new weapons yet, which will be another challenge for the Western powers.
Yesterday's operations and the targeting of the Israeli ship and the American warships is a message that the Yemeni armed forces will continue their operations against the enemy. No matter what the Americans do, whether political or military moves, we will continue with our strategic options until the aggression against our brothers in Gaza stops. The Yemeni army will carry out more strikes and steal has big surprises for the enemy in the coming days, unless the enemy stops the brutal aggression against Gaza.
On Saturday, the British cargo ship Ruby Mar, which had been targeted by the Yemeni army last month, sank in the Red Sea. The sinking of the Ruby Mar has raised concerns about the potential ecological damage to the Red Sea and its coral reefs, as it was carrying more than 41 tons of fertilizer and had leaked oil for several days after the attack.
Yemeni officials hold the US and UK fully responsible for any pollution resulting from the sinking of the British ship. They assert that Washington is the one militarizing the Red Sea, supporting the Israeli war on Gaza and depriving Palestinians of humanitarian aid, which are the main reasons for Yemeni naval operations. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism, totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our streets has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saeed Pourreza, London.
Iran has held a final round of a national moot court to stimulate taking proceedings against enforcers of unilateral sanctions and those who comply with them. The session was held by Iran's Institute of Judiciary in cooperation with the country's High Council for Human Rights in Tehran. Speaking at the event, the secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, said that sanctions were considered weapons of war and even more destructive than a war due to their substantial impacts and being a collective punishment against a targeted country's people.
Undeniable rights cannot be ignored in sanctions, and implementing global peace and security cannot be possible without taking such rights into consideration. The legality of the legitimacy of sanctions is an important issue that the Security Council must consider in the discussion of imposing sanctions. Meanwhile, the international community has not yet accepted the legitimacy of unilateral sanctions.
Elena Duhan, UN Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights, also delivered a speech at the session via video conference.
In the situation of Iran, the most absurd cases refer to the impossibility to deliver bandages for EB patients from the only monopolist producer in Sweden, and similarly impossibility to deliver the medicine necessary for thalassemia patients suffering from some sort of autist state, as well as some sort of psychological and physical diseases, especially if we are talking about the rare ones or the most severe ones. As a result, these are patients which are not directly designated by any type of sanctions, which are deprived of any possibility of access to health care system.
Meanwhile, speaking at the session, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani said sanctions were the biggest crimes against humanity and were a collective punishment and proof that those who pursue and promote unilateralism do not respect human rights.
Iran is among the countries under the U.S. cruel sanctions, which is making efforts to restore the country's rights as a national duty. Sanctions arise from the international behavior and phenomena, and they disturb the future security and stability of the world. For a country which imposes sanctions, international law or human rights are not important.
Iran has been under U.S. sanctions for the past 4 decades. The sanctions intensified following the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from a 2015 nuclear deal in May 2018, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Iranian authorities have repeatedly blamed the U.S. sanctions for shortage of medicines that treat special diseases like cancer. Health officials have warned that the harm caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran's access to pharmaceutical supplies may even get worse in the future. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed the readiness of the Lebanese resistance to face any possible Israeli aggression against Lebanon. He said any Israeli act of aggression would trigger an advanced version of the 2006 war, when the Tel Aviv regime suffered a humiliating defeat at the hands of Hezbollah.
The Zionist enemy continues to threaten us with military aggression. We respond by means of steadfastness, resistance, and retaliatory strikes. We hereby declare that if they commit a foolish act and attack our territories, there would then be a new version of the July 2006 war.
He warned Israelis that Hezbollah would fight in an even more sophisticated manner in any future confrontation, stressing that the outcome will eventually be a victory for the resistance fighters. Sheikh Qasem was speaking at the 6th International Conference for the Union of Resistance Scholars in Lebanon's capital, Beirut. Representatives of the Palestinian resistance factions also stressed that the United States' all-out support for the Israeli warmongering policies has given a cover to the Israeli regime to continue its atrocities as its genocidal Gaza war has marked 150 days. Hamas official Osama Hamdan stressed that Muslim nations are duty-bound to foil U.S.-Israeli plots against war-torn Gaza.
It is the duty of Arabs and Muslims worldwide to take the initiative and foil Israel's conspiracy of starvation. The countries neighboring the Gaza Strip must not stand idly by and should take a concrete measure especially for Gazans in the north.
Scholars and thinkers from diverse Muslim countries have come together to voice their support for the Palestinian people and the resistance. They sent a message of solidarity for Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as Israel's unbridled and unfazed brutality continues unabated.
50 scholars, top scholars from 25 countries, they are gathered here, and hopefully they will reach to any kind of the solution, kind of support and solidarity for the people.
The Palestinians are sending a very strong message. That, look, you be answerable to this. You know, the accountability is not only in Israeli who are the murderers, but accountability should also be there among the Muslims. Why are you not doing anything? So that's why Palestinians are giving that voice. They are struggling. They are saying they're going to fight to the end. And therefore, they say, if you want to help, it's your responsibility. It's not we appealing.
With the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza now in its fifth month and over 30,000 civilian fatalities, scholars in Beirut assert that the resistance in the region has no choice but to continue its armed struggle until the final victory.
The Muslim clerics in support of the resistance have stressed through their discussions and meetings here in Beirut that the Palestinian cause is a reason for unity and solidarity. They say the teachings of the Quran have drawn a roadmap for supporting the Palestinian people in their struggle to free a land considered holy to all Muslims. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A series of restrictions were imposed on the Yemeni economy following the U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group earlier this year. This blacklisting has had an impact on the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country, where millions of people are in dire need of aid.
Ansarullah as a political component has no external economic relations or companies in the private sector that have real weight in the national economy. The real goal of the resolution is to blackmail Ansarullah and distort their position in support of Gaza. The Yemeni economy has been in a state of siege for 9 years, and therefore the American measures putting pressure on the local economy we believe will not have much effect, especially since the Yemeni economy has withstood pressure over the past years and adapted to the measures imposed by the exiled Yemeni government in Riyadh. The Central Bank of Yemen will also work to impose procedures to secure the transfer of foreign exchange to and from Yemen.
Several international companies, including the money transfer company Western Union, have suspended their activities in Yemen, severely affecting the livelihoods of most Yemenis who rely on financial support from relatives abroad. Experts predict that such actions will lead to the creation of a black market for those benefiting from the suspension of money transfers.
The United States of America imposed collective punishment on the Yemeni people. Very important financial channels were stopped, such as Western Union, which is one of the most important money transfer networks in the world, and through it, Yemeni expatriates in American and European countries used to send money to their families in Yemen easily. We have 6 million expatriates outside the country and thousands of Yemeni families depend on them to provide a living. You can imagine what the situation will become after these financial transfers stop. The beneficiaries of this measure are black market workers who exploit these circumstances by deducing a percentage of their remittances and transfer them through illegal channels.
In an effort to deter Yemen's naval operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, the U.S. Department of State blacklisted the Ansarullah movement as a specially designated global terrorist group. However, this designation has primarily affected the humanitarian situation, as members of the Ansarullah movement have no investments abroad.
Observers believe that Washington's recent measures are aimed at inciting the Yemeni people to take to the streets in opposition to the Ansarullah movement as a strategic move to undermine the group's popularity in the country. But that plot does not look like it will succeed, given the widespread support for Ansarullah in Yemen.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger, to let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. Oh, the most merciful.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kabet Afwai. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children, in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Mukhabir Abu Saida is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator who joins us from New York. Gentlemen, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mohammed Abu Sada, I'm going to start with you first, of which 500,000 are fighting